Okay, good afternoon, everybody. It's 12 o'clock here on the East Coast, Monday, June 25th. And I am Chanoch Harris, and I have the good fortune of hosting the beginning of today's two-part teleconference on understanding compulsions and looking at something called Emunah from the Inside Out. This is in conjunction with Guard Your Eyes and a leading resource for Jewish men looking to just find it purity and holiness. And it really is an honor to be able to share something with you. My goal here is to introduce an understanding over the course of this week and next week, sharing kind of the understanding as I see it and the implications and how it's been of help to me and to others. But I really view this as an introduction of sorts. The value of this learning experience and this understanding is it can happen in a moment, but it's certainly normal that whereas the hopefulness and the power of it might be visible quite quickly, because owing to the simplicity of the ideas. Nonetheless, there's a depth and a an ongoing capacity to see and see more deeply into how this understanding makes a profound difference. So I'm looking to this as really an introduction. And in Yitzhak Hashem, if there's interest, there'll be opportunities beyond these two parts. So I'm going to go ahead and jump in. My intent is to kind of share somewhere around maybe 15, 20 minutes, maybe a little bit more of kind of the foundations of what it is that I'm speaking about, this idea of Emunah from the inside out. And then ideally there'll be an opportunity for folks, if they're interested, to raise a question or to make a comment. There is a certain power to to having the chance to kind of sit with it and reflect on it and have a conversation about it. So let's get started. So the goal of this two-part series, as I mentioned, is to understand something about the nature of compulsive behaviors, to understand something about the nature of addictions. And here's one way of understanding it. This is how I see it. This is how I've experienced it in both my own experience as well as in the work that I've done with others. What I find is that as part of a normal experience of life, there's occurrences of stress, insecurity, anxiety, where something looks problematic or difficult, something of an emergency or just something that needs fixing. And then whoever's experiencing that distress goes about trying to alleviate themselves of the stress, trying to fix the problem. You know, there's an attempt to change what looks to be the source of that distress. So it might be an effort to change. People around them. Maybe there's something going on with one's spouse or with one's children. There's something that's going on that's a source of difficulty or frustration. And so we'll go about trying to change that thing or, you know, some financial situation, or maybe it'll be something in association with ourselves. Maybe there's a bad habit that with ourselves that we're experiencing. This is not right. This needs to be different, and we undergo an attempt to change it, feeling the urgency of, you know, a need for change. Now, what can happen is that the attempt to change those various things, whether it be myself or others or the circumstances, generally speaking, it's quite common that our efforts to change those circumstances don't go, and the very effort to bring about the change meets with lack of results and meets with a failure, and that introduces an additional layer of distress, almost like a shame. In other words, there's the unpleasantness of the distress. I have a habit that I don't like, I'd like to change, and then as I repeatedly find myself unable to make the change in that habit or in this aspect of my marriage or this aspect of my child, etc., the feeling of meeting consistently with an ability to get the change I want is can lead to a feeling of hopelessness. So there's the unpleasantness, but then there's the added pain of a sense of feeling hopeless and a kind of a learned failure that I'm unable to rid myself of the challenge, of the difficulty. I cannot overcome it. I cannot be free. That experience of the distress met with failed attempts to change the source of the distress, that feeling of shame or hopelessness that can arise, that can lead, and that generally does lead, for a need for relief. The buildup of that feeling of pain, of frustration, of hopelessness, I want relief from that. And a distraction can be a very powerful resource to allow me to escape from that pain of that frustration, of that upset. That escape is what is at the root. That desire for escape is what is at the root of compulsive behaviors. Whether it's a person who's involved in gambling or in eating or in shopping or in internet use or pornography or whatever it might be, it's an experience of an outlet that there's a sense that I have an experience of my life that is just too painful. I don't know how to be with it because every time I encounter it, it's not only unpleasant, but even more than that, it's a symbol of a failure. It's a symbol of my impotence, and it's just painful. It's existentially painful to be with it. I am looking for a way to relieve myself of facing and being in the presence of that psychic pain. And that's where distractions, that's where compulsive behaviors, addictions are extraordinarily helpful, at least in the short term, by giving me a refuge, by giving me a place to escape from that psychic pain. And that's, as I understand it, the root of compulsive behaviors and addictions. You know, it's the innocent human effort. It's got its destructive side effects, but it's really it's the very real and understandable desire of a human being to relieve himself of that pain. And what I want to do right now is I want to look a little more closely at the nature of that experience, of the nature of our emotional experience, our psychological experience, and see how there's something to see about that. There's something to understand about that that can give us a very powerful, just a whole paradigm, a whole different understanding that basically allows us to work, instead of working at odds with our own nature, we innocently are working at odds with our own wholesomeness, our own yashrus, our own inborn quality of wholesomeness, of desire for good. Instead of working at odds with our desire, with that inborn desire for good, we can work in sync with our desire for good, and whereby it's not even us that's going to be responsible for the heavy lifting of the change. That's the premise of what I'm going to share, is that with a different understanding, with an accurate understanding of what's actually going on in what's the anatomy of our psychological experience, of our distress, our stress, etc., with an accurate understanding of how that works, we can let go of the ways in which we work at odds with our nature, and we can allow ourselves to work in sync with an extraordinarily powerful divine quality within us that we don't need to generate, we don't need to make. It is present in every single human being, and that is what is actually going to account for the growth that we're going to make. So that's kind of the headline. And now let's take a look. So what I want to do is I want to look at the fact that our experience of life, our stress and insecurity, what I find is that human beings are not static. You know, we're not experiencing consistency or a constant state of mind in terms of our equilibrium. And I think everyone who's experienced having bad habits can see that there are times where the habit will look overwhelmingly compelling. Like there's just nowhere to do. There's not. I have no choice. I can't not avail myself of the bad habit. it's just life is way too stressful and way too tumultuous that I don't know how to, I need relief. I just cannot go without it. However, there are times where we have greater equilibrium. There's no person in the world that does not experience some fluidity in their own internal state, where they're more balanced, they're more settled, and they have the option to act out in some way or another. They might have privacy with which to do gambling or eating or internet use, and they sense like, I don't want this, you know, like I feel good enough about my life that, like, why would I want to sully myself with something that I don't want? That why do I want to, I don't want to degrade myself, right? Now, that doesn't mean that a day later or even an hour later or even a minute later, they don't feel gripped by the urgency of finding relief. But what I'm pointing to is that it's not constant. The need or the feeling of urgency, of necessity to seek refuge in the habit is not a constant. It's moving, and we ourselves are moving targets. Our mood, I would say. I guess that's what I'm really pointing to, is that our mood, I'm speaking about our mood as kind of the quality of our state of mind. On the one extreme, our state of mind is extremely insecure and stressed. And on the other extreme, our state of mind might be quite calm, quite broad-minded and peaceful. And human beings, no matter what's going on in their lives, they're moving. They're moving, and they might not even notice that they're moving, but they are. They might not notice it in the moment. In fact, it's quite common that we don't notice it in the moment. What is it that we might perceive to be the source and the nature of what is it that we're experiencing? It could very well be that what we understand to be our experience is something of this world. Like, for example, there are times where one of my sons, when I sit down to learn with him, 2 or 3 minutes into the learning, he just starts to fall apart, and he just makes all kinds of protests about his inability to sit and just do, you know, tachazer his gemara, whatever it might be. And there are times where I find it to be just unbearably upsetting. Like, how immature are you? And I just get really upset and really frustrated. And I kind of, you know, I almost feel like it's not even a consideration. I'm going to come down on him. I'm going to give him a hard time. I'm going to shove and push him and pressure him to see that what he's doing is just, you know, ridiculous, and he has to just stay with it, you know. Now, generally speaking, after the fact, I see that it doesn't really help, but it's almost like it's a habit. Like I go into that controlling, upset, insecure mode where I feel I have to get him on board because it's like threatening. It literally feels threatening that he's behaving in the way he's behaving, and I got to stop it. There are other times, fascinatingly, where I'll sit down to learn with him, and there he goes. He's flipping out. He's starting to get all antsy and make it known that he's not going to be cooperative and, you know, and feel he's just going to fall apart. And I'll look at him and I'll actually be able to see that this is a kid who's suffering. I'm not saying that I don't desire him to have a different experience and a different way of, you know, managing his inner world. It's not like I don't care, but I have a little more compassion. I don't feel personally threatened by his inability to settle down and learn and do this thing. I have what I describe as a more secure, a more peaceful, a more broad-minded experience of his behavior. And what's fascinating is that I don't manage that in a certain sense. Like, in other words, I don't go into the session with him saying, okay, today, if he starts flipping out, let's do the reactive, you know, give him a hard time thing. And then on another occasion, say to myself in advance, let's said, hey, you know what, let's do it. Let's try variety. Let's go with the more even-keeled, you know, broad-minded, you know, be with him and be compassionate. I don't do that. I have an experience of what is basically a highly similar circumstance called my son's behavior. And I have two very different internal experiences of those pretty much identical behaviors. And that to me is common. Like, in other words, that's all over the place in my life. I have not only different experiences of what are otherwise highly similar behaviors of my children, but that's true in my experience of marriage. That's true in my experience of my bank account. It's true in my experience of my work life. There are times where I feel that I'm, you know, something's going on in my work life that is hitting a wall, and I get very discouraged. But then there are other times where I can acknowledge that I have an encounter with a bump, a very similar bump, and I just understand that this is, you know, I don't know. I don't take it personally. I don't get flipped out. And not only that, not only am I speaking about my ability to have a variety of experiences with similar circumstances out there, I would say it goes so far as to include my experience of my own self, my own past. So, like, for example, I could remember at times a thought, a memory of a major klutz move on my part in some area of life. That memory comes to me, and literally I kind of fall into an experience of intense embarrassment and shame. Like, I'm literally in the middle, you know, it was a year and a half ago the event occurred. And, you know, I'm sitting in the middle of nowhere and the memory comes to mind, and I'm experiencing literally a taste of that embarrassment and shame again. And then there are other times where that memory occurs, or I might even be describing the memory to somebody, and I'm doing it in a very easygoing, even-keeled way where I don't feel personally threatened by the memory of that mistake. So the idea is that there's something going on in terms of my internal experience that cannot be accounted for by the circumstances and experience of the world out there. It can't be. It doesn't. I mean, first of all, just on an experiential level, I'm attesting to the fact that that's not the way it works for me. Each one of us listening to this can ask and see whether or not that's true. I would suggest that that's true for everybody, and it's certainly what I've encountered in working with people in this regard, is that we're having moods. You know, basically what I'm pointing to is the very simple fact of having moods, and the moods are really the lens through which we're experiencing life. We're not experiencing events themselves. When I experience even the memories of our own past directly, we're experiencing the what is a mood already then? What is it? So what is this mood that's happening? What accounts for my mood if it's not the child's behavior, my wife's this, my, you know, memory as it comes to mind? But what accounts for a mood is the gift of thought. I don't mean the gift of thought that is coming from beyond me in this moment. It's the gift of thought from the Almighty that flows through me. Now, by thought here, I don't mean the notion of thought that you and I have access to that we can think actively. If I were to say to you, think of five things that you did today after you woke up, you could list a list of five things. You could say, I woke up, I did Nagelbots, or I got dressed, I did, you know, you could list those things, but I'm not referring to that type of thought. I'm talking to something more subtle and more spiritual than that, more ruchni, that there is a flow, there's a stream of consciousness that flows through every single human being that at times, and much of the time, is not even visible to us, yet it's an absolute fact that flow is an unceasing, unending kind of, you know, flow of spiritual information flowing through our consciousness. And that flow of consciousness is ranging from insecure, constricted thinking to more expansive, broader thinking. That's the nature of the human experience, is that the Almighty moment to moment to moment, is making available to us the gift of thought now, and then again now, and then again now, and I'm not managing that thought in the sense that I'm creating it, I'm not summoning it, I'm not even really controlling it. I am able to understand it, and I'm able to have a relationship with the flow of thought, but the truth is that I'm not authoring that flow. And this is important, and I want to give you a mushel for where I see that Torah is pointing to this truth, this very powerful truth that allows us to kind of have, at least for me, a different relationship with the nature of my own internal experience. The mushel that I see clearly pointing to this is the mushel of the heart. The pasuk says, "V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha." Love the Almighty with levavcha. The Gemara points out that it could have said libecha. Why levavcha with two vases? And the Gemara says, because it's with the two hearts that you've been endowed with, the two hearts with both yitzrecha, both mechanisms through which divine energy flows through you. Now, if you think about the mushel of the heart, this is meaningful, because the physical heart is, on a basic level, the heart is directing blood throughout the entirety of our body. There's literally billions and billions and billions of cells in our entire physical being, and every last cell requires the delivery of essential things in order for that cell to be animated. In order for that cell not to die off, the cell needs a continuous delivery system of oxygen. It needs a continuous delivery system of nutrients. And as the cell, so literally there's a flow of blood that the heart is pumping that is animating. It's giving energy to the entirety of our physical existence. Now, it happens to be that as each of those billions of cells makes use of the oxygen and nutrients and other things that the heart is delivering through the flow of blood, when the cell makes use of those things, it releases a toxin. It releases CO2 with using the oxygen. It releases other toxins when it reuses the nutrients. And then in the opposite direction, the blood is pumping what is basically a poison-filled flow of blood. So if you take a moment to consider, that means that at all times a normal, healthy, functioning human being is flowing with both a flow of extraordinarily healthy and helpful blood, and simultaneously he's flowing at all times with a flow of blood that is poisonous. And that is the nature of a healthy system. That is the fundamental to a healthy, complete human system. Now, if that's true in the realm of the physical heart, and the heart is a mushel for a ruchani thing, then all the more so for the spiritual heart, the lave that we're referring to as the lave haruchani, it is the portal through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pumping consciousness through the human experience. And just as you and I are having a conversation, or you're listening to me talk right now, and you and I are not doing a thing to cause that blood flow to go. We're not causing the healthy flow of blood to go. We're not causing the toxin-filled blood to go. We're not. We're just, you and I are having an experience right now of thinking, learning, listening, whatever it is that we're doing, and the Almighty is pumping our heart. He's doing that. It's not me. I'm not causing or generating that. Well, that's true all the more so for the flow of spiritual, the spiritual heart, the portal through which the Almighty is delivering the flow of spiritual consciousness is also Him. He's pumping that. He's pumping a flow of expansive, a broad-minded, peaceful thinking through my experience, and simultaneously he's pumping a flow of insecure, self-centered, mistrustful consciousness as well. That is the design. That's the design of every functional human being. Every healthy human being has those simultaneous flows, and it is not something that you do. You don't cause it. You don't even manage it. You and I can't stop or redirect the flow of the physical blood flow through our bodies, and we do not have direct control over the flow of this spiritual thought that flows through us. That is the essence of the design of a human being, is that we're experiencing that moment-to-moment gift of flow. And what I understand from this is that when the pasuk says, "Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha," love the Almighty b'chol levavcha, with both your hearts, the point is that we're not meant to understand first and foremost that we're there, that we're the our job, as outlined by that pasuk, is not to have only positive thoughts, or alternatively to rid ourselves of negative thoughts. It's not. The job, as the pasuk lays out, is to serve the Almighty with both platforms. These are different platforms of service. The Almighty tells us in advance, I'm going to pump your consciousness with Harchavas Adas, with broad-minded consciousness, and I will pump your consciousness with Kotzer Ruach, with a narrowness of spirit that feels urgent, that feels frightened, that feels anxious. I'm going to pump your consciousness with both, and know that I'm going to do so, and that you're meant to serve me with both of those platforms. And the beginning of our service of the Almighty is to understand where that experience is coming from, where the consciousness, where our thinking, and how there, and therefore how our experience of life is being animated. Our experience of life cannot be animated or caused by my child's behavior. It cannot work that way. And it cannot be animated by my interaction with my wife. It can't be animated by anything. There's only one source of experience in this moment, and that is through the gift of divine thought that's happening right now. That is the only way I have experience in this world, any psychological experience, is through the gift of divine thought as it's showing up in my heart, in my consciousness, right this moment. That's the truth. Now, what happens is that when we misunderstand that, when we get this, what happens is, I'll speak for myself, when I experience the presence of my child's behavior or misbehavior as a source of, as threatening to me, like I get alarmed, the alarm bells start ringing, and I feel an urgency to do something, you know, to put him in his place, to discipline him, to get angry at him, to change his behavior, what I've done innocently, it's a mistake, but there's an innocence to it, is that I've misunderstood the source of my experience. I've located the source of my experience in him and his behavior, and thereby set off on really what is a fool's errand to change something as if it were actually meaningful and significant, as if it were the cause of my experience, and as if I had the ability to change it through changing that external thing. This would be likened to, now again, I'm not suggesting that there isn't inappropriate behavior. My son is definitely capable of inappropriate behavior. I'm capable of inappropriate behavior. But my son's inappropriate behavior cannot be the source of my distress in this moment. And this is very important, because this is where we get back to the idea of learning how we can innocently work at odds with the nature, with our own goodkeit, with our own yashrus. Because if I think that the experience of my psychological experience, my internal experience, is coming from the outside in, as opposed to the inside out, then I start running after the outside experience, looking to try and change it as a way of gaining relief. So this could be likened to, I like the metaphor of weather. Let's say we liken the weather outside to one's own mood, to one's internal weather. There's outside weather. Guess what? There's also internal weather. Outside, there are times where the sky is blue and it's beautiful and sunny. And outside, there are times where the sky is overcast, gray, and rainy. Right? That's the reality, obviously, of the physical world that we live in. Now, if I were to think that I have the ability and therefore the responsibility to change the outside weather, I'm going to set myself up for a lot of heartache. So, for example, let's say Chol HaMoed Pesach shows up, and I'm all excited the night before to take my family out on a beautiful outing to a park and do a picnic and all that. And I wake up the next day, and I look and I see it's raining, and the sky is gray, and it's just not an outdoor day today. So if I don't understand kind of how it works, I might find myself standing at the window with this, like, you know, exertion look on my face, and I'm sitting there at the window for a whole, like, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and I'm, like, working at it. You know, I'm working as I'm looking out the window. And my wife comes to me, and she says, "What are you doing?" And I say, I'm not happy with today's weather, and I'm going to change the weather. She's like, "Well, what? You can't do that." No, leave me alone. Don't tell me about what I can and can't do. I'm going to change the weather. Now, that is going to lead to a certain amount of frustration because, first of all, it's false. It's just not true. I can't change the weather. And the degree to which I perceive myself as being capable of, on the hook for changing the weather, and then unable to change the weather, the weather being the weather is not only going to be a short momentary problem, it's going to become an entrenched problem. I'm going to get really discouraged by that. To the degree that I have a false understanding about what I'm on the hook for, about where it is that what I'm responsible for, what my job is, I am going to run after I'm going to set myself up for a lot of failure. And there's a certain norm as to how human beings deal with kind of habitual failure. See, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, it says, "Asa Elokim Esa Adam Yashar." The Almighty made people straight. There's a simplicity, there's a wholesomeness, there's a goodkeit to people that is natural to the way the Almighty made us. There is a buoyancy. We have a compass inside of us that is seeking straightforward goodness. Vehem bikshu cheshbonos rabos, and it's they that seek out calculations and complications. It's our misunderstanding about our experience that leads us to become, that leads us to overlook and lose sight of our natural capacity to be with distress and to recover and to find new ways of being. It's our complications and our misunderstanding about the necessity of managing, strategizing, calculating what is not ours to calculate and strategize. I am not suggesting that there is no need to act in accordance with halacha or with what is appropriate, God forbid. I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying that what leads us to fall, that what leads us to become the mother of our addictions and our bad habits is the learned failure, the learned helplessness in the presence of a job that is not ours to do. It's the misunderstanding that we are somehow on the hook to manage internal weather, and then when we encounter our inability to manage internal weather, we feel failure. And it's not normal that a human being is going to feel consistent failure and just hang out in failure. He's going to seek escape. He's going to find relief for the learned failure. It's just not, it's human nature to seek relief. It's something to have understanding and compassion for. Obviously, I'm not here to condone it. I'm just saying it's just normal that human beings do that. And as we gain understanding as to the nature of our job in this world, what is our job and what's not our job, as we gain understanding of what is true about our experience and what cannot be true about our experience, then we start to settle down and we start to get simpler about our job. It's not a problem that I have distress. in a grand sense. The Almighty told me in advance, I'm going to usher you through experiences of broad-mindedness and stress. Your job is to serve me, and the beginning of that is to understand what's true and the nature of what's true in this world. The moment I get lost and I forget about what's true, I start trying to change weather. I start trying to change weather, and I'm going to set myself up for discouragement. Whereas if I don't have a pretense, I don't have a havamina that I can manage the weather, then I can ride the waves of, you know, ups and downs and experience the Almighty's closeness in my inside of me. I can have, I don't need, like, imagine you lived a life where you could not live, you could not live your life except when it was sunny. You couldn't go to work. You couldn't go shopping. You couldn't go anywhere unless it were sunny, and you were on the hook at all times to make sure that that the world was a sunny place. You're not going to, that's not a recipe for a healthy life. You know, you and I need to be able to be, and this is my understanding of Menuchas HaNefesh. Menuchas HaNefesh is not that I'm continuously feeling good and comfortable. It's that I have license and freedom to feel distress without the need to change or manage or run from this distress. And we see this all over the place in Tehillim and elsewhere, that David HaMelech understood that his experience of expansion was an opportunity to thank the Almighty, and his experience of Meitzar was an opportunity to turn to the Almighty. And that is, in my experience, the more I get interested in my job, the beginning of my job is always to live in what's true, to know what's true about my experience of life. My experience of life is always coming, it's not coming from my past, it's not coming from my marriage, it's not coming from anything except one thing. It's coming in this moment from the gift of divine thought that I can't control, but yet I'm experiencing it because I'm experiencing the Almighty's interaction with me in this moment. And that is my very long preamble. There's certainly a lot more to say, but I just feel like that's a lot, and it would be good for me to pause and just check in to see if someone has a thought or a question, whether this is something that is resonating, whether this is something that's, you know, please. This is obviously a teleconference. I don't know who's speaking to me. You're welcome to identify yourself. You're welcome just to chime in. I'm ceding the floor.
Elchanan.
Does someone have a comment or a question about what we've discussed so far? Okay, good. So I'm going to keep going, but feel free to pause me for a moment here, okay, and just chime in and say, well, wait, what about this or what about that? So now the reason why... See, the reason why this is powerful, as I understand it, is because, like I said, the nature of compulsive behaviors is that the experience of it is that I don't know how, like as smart as I am, as resourceful as I am, I don't know how to be different even as I'm standing in the action that is degraded or, you know, not, I don't want to be doing what I'm doing, and yet I'm doing it, you know? I don't know how to not be standing in that. I don't know how not to follow through. Now, what I'm pointing to is the fact that, like, I just last week, I had a gentleman come to me who we met, you know, just working one-on-one, and who was describing to me that he came in and he showed up and he said, you know, I'm married 7 months or 10 months, I forget how many months, and you know, my wife stepped out. She basically left the home because she felt that I was mistreating her, and she senses that I'm involved in something that's not good, but that she doesn't know that I'm a daily user of pornography, and I see that I've, you know, for the since I was a teenager. I've been using this. He's now in his early 20s. And and what he said was that he said of himself, I see that I have low self-esteem and I lack trust in people. And I see that as a result, I end up getting lost in these habits, you know, and I'm not sure how to, you know, I have problems, you know, already from my past, right? So it was ironic because when I shared with him, well, you're sitting down and you're sharing with me in a pretty open way that you're that you have a daily bad habit, and you're sharing with me openly that you have trouble trusting people, and you know, here you are and I are talking for the first time. And you're sharing this, and he's like, well, you're right, but I know that these are problems that I have. And so my goal was to show to him was that, like, well, more than you have an issue called low self-esteem, you have moods. You have moods in which you experience greater clarity and calm, in which you don't feel, you feel like a certain, you know, it's natural for you not to want to run after those, that habit. But then there are times where you feel low. You feel unpleasant. Now, it's only normal to associate that experience with something. By the way, this is the mitzvah of lo yelecha Elohim acherim. There's a mitzvah to midi. There's a constant mitzvah of not ascribing power to something other than the Almighty, right? There's mitzvah it's basically idolatry. To ascribe power to something other than the Almighty is to make a mistake in the area of lo yelecha Elohim acherim. So when a guy feels insecure, he starts naturally looking around for, well, where is and where, when and how and what's the cause. So he doesn't know offhand, but he says, well, you know what, it's obviously my past. I had this experience in my past. I was mistreated. I didn't fit in. I was abused. God forbid, not to diminish or make light of the pain associated with that experience, but to understand and to have an understanding of what's true. We want to stand in what's true, because the more a person knows what must be true about his psychological experience, and the more a person understands what cannot be true about the nature of his psychological experience moment to moment, the more he settles into the yashrus and he lets go of the cheshbonos rabim that interfere with the natural yashrus. The goal of this conversation, the goal of this emunah from inside out, is not about how I'm going to share with you things that you can do to increase your emunah. On the contrary, the goal of what I'm sharing with you is how you're already in touch with the emunah wisdom, in touch with the yashrus that allows you to stay clear of destructive things. It's already the case that the Almighty and His wisdom is reaching you. It's our misunderstanding about how the Almighty is reaching us, how He's animating our psychological experience, and He alone is animating my psychological experience. It's that understanding that allows me to see and experience the truth of what is His closeness, and it's allowing me to let go of the need to run after things that won't help me. It's that clarity that allows me to step back from the window and change the weather, which will not, it won't work, and it's going to exhaust me and leave me discouraged and leave me incapable of being in the presence of my own yashrus. So lo yelecha Elohim acherim is a mitzvah tamidi, and our sages say about, the chachamim say about the mitzvahs tamidias, that they are a miklat. They are cities of refuge. Again, the point of what I'm sharing with you right now is not how to feel different. I am not talking about I'm not giving you wisdom or strategies or tools or techniques of any kind in the sense that do this and you will feel calmer, more peaceful, freer. I'm not doing that. I am saying that when you understand what's true and you let go of what's false, Memela, you will find that your yashrus, that the power within you that is not of your doing, it's not of your strategizing, it will show up in a more natural way because it is your nature. It is our nature, the yashrus. And so that quality of you know, I am free to experience pain and distress without the need to run away from it, without the need to wrestle or change it. And that's beautiful, because I got news for you. You know, one of the other Sheish Mitzvahs says like this. It says, Lo susuru achrei levavchem v'achrei einechem. Don't run after the destructive impulses of your heart and your eyes, right? So check listen to the metaphor for a second. Listen to the visual that the pasuk is bringing forth. Don't run after the destructive thoughts of your heart and eyes. Well, if the image that comes to my mind is that there's these destructive thoughts, and they're moving, and you are running after them. And the pasuk is saying, the Torah is saying, don't run after those destructive thoughts and Well, guess what? If you stop running and you remain stationary, you remain in your place, what is going to happen to those destructive thoughts? They are going to keep moving. The simple ability to stay put, to just acknowledge, okay, this is weather. When it rains, I do not, for the most part, I don't undertake to change the weather. I don't go and attend to the weather as something to deal with or to manage or to control. I don't do it. I let the weather be, and guess what happens to weather? It moves. But even more than that, I want to be clear, this is not a technique, just let it be and then it'll change, and then that's the goal, is to get the weather to change. The truth is that the flip side of Lo Yelecha Elohim Acharim says, you're standing there as your son is misbehaving, or as your wife is doing something that you don't like, or as the memory of your own failure comes to your own mind, right? You're standing there in an insecure, distressed feeling. Yeah, that's where you're standing. You're standing in a low mood, and it looks natural and obvious to you that it is the child's behavior, it is my wife's this or doing this or that, or it is the fact of my own past that is the source of my experience right now. And as I acknowledge, that pain is, I feel the pain, but I have one toe in the door of understanding what's true, that it cannot be that those are actually sourcing my experience. On the contrary, the Almighty is sourcing my experience because of the flow of the gift of thought. There is only one way that it shows up. And I got news for you. The mitzvah of Amunah, the flip side of Lo Yelecha, is just as Lo Yelecha is to understand what cannot be the source of your experience. The mitzvah of Amunah, the mitzvah of Amunah is to know positively that He is sourcing your experience. He is causing you expansion and contraction and expansion and contraction. And you know what that is? That's similar to? That reminds us of a very simple chazal right in the beginning of Parshas Noach that says, Eilu told us, Noach yish tzadik haya b'dorosav. Noach was these are the children of Noach. Oh, by the way, Noach was a tzaddik. Why not list the children's names if you're going to tell me these are the children of Noach? Why tell me he's a tzaddik and then afterwards? So Chazal say, because Iker told us, Seyim shel tzaddikim ma'asim tovim, the primary children of a good person in this world are his actions, which is to say that the metaphor for bringing forth good in this world is birth. If you've experienced your wife, or if you know anything about birth, you know that there's only one way a baby comes into this world, and that is through contractions and dilations, and then contractions and dilations. And the woman in the midst of birth will feel a tremendous amount of pain in the course of the contraction, and she might be inclined to want to change the contraction or do something about the contraction, And the advice that that my wife was given before we had our first child was, you know, when you get that temptation to try and do something about the contraction, don't. You're going to, God forbid, you try to push or do something in the midst of the contraction, you can hurt yourself, God forbid. A contraction is a divine force that's bigger than you. It's a force that's greater than you, and it's acting upon you for one reason, and that is because it is facilitating a new divine life in this world. And that is exactly what every single one of us is experiencing day in, day out. We experience contractions, and we experience dilations. And then at a certain point, we get a new understanding about life. We get a new experience that allows us to see something new, that allows us to experience ourselves in a new way. And the more we understand the birth-like nature of our experience, the less we try to manage the contractions, the less we injure ourselves, God forbid, the more we have appreciation that this is Emunah from the inside out. In other words, Emunah from the inside out is not that the Almighty is running the geo-global, you know, picture, and he's running the earthquakes and the natural avalanches, etc. Yeah, of course he's doing that. And he's also arranging that there be a parking spot or there's not a parking spot or bank error in your favor or not. It's not only that he's managing that. He's managing your internal experience. He's managing your internal weather through the flow of consciousness that is happening moment to moment to moment. And I will say even further, anyone who's listening on this call and anyone who lives in, who's experiencing life on this planet for that matter, but I'm speaking to you who are on this call, you're on this call right now and I'm sharing with you nice ideas and you might find them interesting, you might find them inspiring, you might find them to be strange or unrelated. I don't know what your experience is. Whatever you're experiencing in this moment is not due to the words that I'm sharing with you. The truth that I'm pointing to is also inclusive of your experience. I do not have the power through my teaching, through my sharing an idea, however eloquent, whatever powerful metaphor, whatever I could do to actually impart this life-changing experience and understanding that has been life-changing for me, whatever I do to impart that it doesn't work that I can actually arrange or arouse within you insight, understanding, perception. That also is a function of one thing and one thing only, and that is the gift of thought that shows up in your heart now from one source and one source only. And I don't know how, you know, I will tell you for myself that I am moving in and out of understanding about this idea of Emunah from the inside out. There are times where I am seeing more clearly how my experience is occurring from the inside out, and it's all, I'm experiencing the Almighty's contraction and dilation. And there are times where it looks to me like it's an outside-in world, and my wife's lack of appreciation or her critical comment or whatever is a source of distress to me whereby I get reactive. And it looks like it just looks so normal and natural for me to push back and to say, well, how dare you, or to become grudging, to feel hurt and begrudging and to withdraw and to become, you know, whatever I do when I get insecure, there are times where it looks like a good idea for me to just, you know, be reactive and looking to get upset and bumped into by the world out there. I don't know how, despite the fact that I am in awe of this understanding, despite the fact that I have seen how the body of work called my life has dramatically opened up in so many ways, my experience of Shalom Bayis, my experience of Chinuch Bani, my experience of Talmud Torah, my experience of davening, my experience of my own, you know, habits with internet, with food, with whatever they are, as much as I can see and acknowledge how this understanding has opened up my life and the body of work in a beautiful way, I don't know how to guarantee that I don't still fall apart and get lost and fooled by the outside-in experience of life. Like, it's built into built into the human experience is the nature of human beings to get lost, and it's the nature of human beings to then wake up, and it's the nature of human beings to get fooled, and it's the nature of human beings to become awakened again. And the more understanding and appreciation I have for that divine quality, the more I see that my yashrus is present. I'm the heavy lifting of my life is not primarily my heavy lifting. I still have bechira, but the heavy lifting of having equilibrium is in a different place than it was without this understanding. Okay, that's my second monologue. Anybody have a comment or question on what I'm sharing so far? Okay, well, we have officially another 90 minutes, so I'm just going to keep going, but I do encourage you to stop and to pause me. You know, I want you to know that these ideas might sound highfalutin or very abstract, but I want you to know that they are the essence of practical. They are mamish, the essence of practical and simple. Because if you think about it, a person who lives with a misunderstanding about the source of his experience, if a person who lives with a false paradigm about how life is working, meaning to the extent that he thinks that things in the world or things in his past are actually sourcing his experience right now, that is the essence of a misunderstanding, a false paradigm. He is not different than a guy who sets out for a nice journey on a boat with the perception that he actually might fall off the edge of the planet, right? Like, in other words, a guy hires me to give him sailing lessons, and I start to get on the boat, assuming I knew how to sail. I'm giving him lessons, and he's on the boat, and I'm looking at him, and I can't help but see that this guy is not exactly relaxed. Like, he's a ball of, you know, of emotions and frustration. Like, he's an edgy guy. So I say to him, is everything okay? Like, what's, you know, are you okay? So he says to me, yeah, everything's fine. I'm nervous because I really want to pay close attention to what you're telling me, because God forbid I go out on the ocean and I start to sail. If I don't know, you know, the instructions clear, I could fall off. So I say to him, no, it's fine. Listen, let me explain something to you. You can't fall off. There is no flat earth. The earth is not flat. You don't have to worry about that. You can learn how to sail, and it's important to know how to sail, but you don't have to, you know, your learning how to sail is not going to make a difference in terms of the possibility of falling off. And then he says to me, listen, I hired you to teach me the basic skills of sailing. I didn't hire you to tell me your theories about the earth, you know. Just get back to what I hired you for. Tell me about how to sail. I can tell him how to sail. I can teach him the basic skills of ropes and masts and whatever they are. But everything is being filtered through a highly troubled mind. Also, Elohim etz Adam Yashar v'hem bikshu cheshbonos rabim. Like, I don't want to go about my life with a misunderstanding about the nature of how life is working. Like I'm pointing to the same way there's a gravity that is operating whether you know about it or you don't know about it. It's helpful to understand that gravity is actually working because it can give you a little context to understand your experience, and it can allow you to take advantage of natural resources that are already present. I'm basically pointing to spiritual gravity. There is a spiritual set of facts that are working. You understand them, they're working. You don't understand them, they're working. But your understanding them gives you a whole different context. And it's what allows us not to exhaust ourselves, not to wear ourselves out, not to work at odds with the beautiful, healthy design that the Almighty implanted within us called Ya'asa Elohim Asa Adam Yashar. And you know, and to me, I don't. Oh, and so back to the practical. This is so practical. Like if you go to Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch is a guide. It's a code of law that is 100% geared toward what do we do? You know, wake up in the morning and say these words, and when you get out of bed, do this, you know, wash your hands this way, and get dressed this way, and then do this way. It's a totally practical code of conduct. But guess what? If you look at the first Ramah, in the first Sif of Shulchan Aruch, he says, Shavisi Hashem v'negdi tamid. Why? Because you cannot compare the conduct and the motions and the behavior of a person who's standing in the presence of the king in the presence of a king to one who's not standing in the presence of a king. So too, says the Ramah, you cannot compare a person's way of going about his life when he's aware of standing in the presence of the King of Kings. Now, see, note there, the Ramah does not say, here's 100 things that you could do to act as if you're standing in front of the King of Kings. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, do these 100 things, and that's what it looks like to stay. He says, Shavisi Hashem l'negdi tamid, live with the awareness that you are already standing in the presence of the Almighty. And guess what? Your entire outlook is going to rise. Your entire comportment is going to be different. I'm pointing to the fact that Emunah from the inside out is simply pointing to the truth that the Almighty is reaching me. Emunah, as I understand it, is not about how I need to flood my mind with facts of God's existence and train my mind and exercise. I'm not against, you know, the work involved in learning about, you know, Niflaus HaBore, and I'm not against that. The premise, though, that I'm working with is, innocently, we sometimes can go about a mitzvah activity as a tool to change our state. As if there's, but see, the premise of that is a misunderstanding, that there is the premise of it is that there's something bad about a state of mind that I'm in. It's bad if I act on it, but typically speaking, what I find is that when I understand the nature of what's behind my state of mind, that the Almighty is behind that too, and it's weather, or it's a contraction, and I'm, you know, I can experience contractions without having to run away from them, then that itself raises the bar of my consciousness. This is the most practical thing to do. It's the beginning of all hishtablis. Whatever hishtablis I'm going to do to change a habit in my mind begins with living with a true understanding of what is true, and the awareness and the ability to identify what cannot be true. That's practical. And that saves me over and over and over again. I get angry in the context of a conversation with my wife, or I get angry about something, and I get a hit of a surge of feeling and an upset. And you know what? Sometimes I will act on it. But then at some point, what I've seen is, because I've become interested in and curious about this understanding, because I've become curious about it, my design is the yashrus that's within me is not of my doing. I am desirous of this truth. I am desirous of this wisdom and this goodkeit, not because of how great my willpower is. I have a bechira, but what I'm pointing out is, like, you know, as I see it now, I am the junior partner in the navigation of my life. And I certainly am not interested in trying to manage my internal mood and my internal weather. I do not want that job. I would never want a job in which I am responsible to feel sunny and warm and happy at all times. I just don't want it. It's too much. I can't do it, and guess what? It's not even the Almighty's plan. The Almighty gave me two hearts. He told me he gave me two hearts. He told me to serve him with two hearts. And guess what? I got news for you also. Having a broad-minded consciousness, having a harchavas adas, is not inherently better. it's an nisayon. It's just as much a nisayon. It's a makom of avoda, just as much as kotzer ruach is. A person who has a nice state of mind, who feels good and happy and peaceful, if he doesn't understand what's behind that experience of broad-mindedness, of harchavas hadas, he will think it's the fact that his boss gave him a compliment, or he'll think that it's owing to his own, how good he is at navigating life. He'll think, he'll associate it with some power other than the Almighty, and then he will be involved in a false paradigm. He'll be involved in lo yeh lecha elohim acherim, and then he'll be confused. It'll be kochi ve'otzim yadi. It'll be idolatry. It'll whatever it is, it will be setting himself up for falsehood. And there is no way that a person can live his life in falsehood and not knock things down. It's just the way we are. When we live with a false understanding about how life works, there will be fallout. It's impossible that there won't be. So I guess to sum up, I'm going to do a quick summary, and then, you know, we've got one more shot if people are interested to raise a comment or a question. I will say, by the way, that you're welcome to contact me. I can be reached by email at info@jewishcenterforwellbeing.com. My website is called jewishcenterforwellbeing.com. I can be reached at info@jewishcenterforwellbeing.com. You can call me and leave a message at 845-393-1529. This recording will be available on my site as well as on the Guard Your Eyes site. So you're welcome to listen again and to check it out. And of course, we'll be continuing next week, Emet Hashem, with a continuation of these ideas and a little bit, you know, further exploration. But I want to remind everyone listening that, as I see it, these ideas are remarkably simple. There is not complication to these ideas, as I see it. They're deep, but they're not complicated. There's it's the exposure. Even just a little bit of curiosity about these ideas, we activate a part of us that's not our own strength. It's not our willpower that we're touching. We're activating something deeper that comes, that is the source of our good kite. So just to review, I want to say that my understanding of where compulsive behaviors come from, is that when a person gets to a place where he experiences something not working in his life, it's only natural that he try to change it. It's only natural that he try to relieve himself of that change, by that frustration. Either he'll try to change somebody in his life, his wife, his child, his bank account, or he'll try to change himself. He'll try to get more disciplined. He'll try to get more spiritual. He'll try to get whatever it'll be. And the nature of the physical world, the nature of the world out there, is that we don't actually have power to change things. We don't have power to change things. We don't have power to change our internal weather. We don't have power to change the people around us. The Almighty has power, not us. So as we innocently engage in trying to change those things and we don't succeed, so it's only normal that we become discouraged and, God forbid, experience a sense of learned failure. And that failure takes the initial distress and it multiplies it. It brings it to a place of intensity that it just becomes difficult to be in the presence of that failing, that shame, that feeling of failure. And it is human. It is absolutely human that a person is going to want to find relief, is going to want to find some relief from that existential pain that is living inside of him. So he'll go to food, he'll go to gambling, he'll go to sex, he'll go to pornography, he'll go to whatever it is human that if the misunderstanding we have about about how our internal experience works, that we're going to seek relief. But what if the experience of distress was based on was itself coming from it was an inside job? What if the Almighty told us, look, I'm supplying you with a continuous flow. There is only one way your experience works. It can't work that things outside of you or from your past can source your experience in this moment. It can't. there's a flow. The same way your heart is pumping both this healthy, oxygenated, nutrient-filled blood and animating the every cell in your body, so too the blood is then carrying toxins and poisons in the opposite direction. At all times, every human, healthy human functioning being is carrying both those flows of blood. So the Almighty says, I'm going to give you two hearts. The same way that your body is functioning with two hearts, I'm going to flow you. You're not managing your physical heart. You're not managing your spiritual heart. I'm pumping your consciousness, the Almighty says, with a flow of expanded awareness and with a flow of constriction and insecurity. And you need to serve me with both of those platforms. What we do innocently is we, and these are the sheish mitzvahs to medias. This is mamish what we're talking about right now. We're talking about emunah and the things that are at the root of our existence that we innocently mistaken. When we get hit with a feeling of insecurity, well, it's only normal to look around and say, it's my wife, it's my child, it's my own failing and this, that, or the other, it's my childhood. And then we go about, you know, we hang our experience on those things, and that's a falsehood. That's the guy at the window trying to change the weather through his mental capacity. He can't do it. He's going to wear himself out, and he's going to work at odds with the natural Yashrus that the Almighty endowed him with. You're not the one who's going to literally cause an you and I can't summon forth the Harchavas Adas that is needed to be free of compulsions and destructive behaviors. We can't generate that. The Almighty, the good news though, is that the Almighty is supplying us with enough of that right now. When we get even a little bit curious about the truth behind our experience, and we start to get a little bit less enamored with the weather out there, a little bit less concerned about the job of changing the weather, guess what? Weather is designed to move. And if you understand that we're here to give birth to new life, you know, a woman in the midst of childbirth, it's uncomfortable. But guess what? She gives, a baby comes out of that. You and I sometimes get stuck in our resentment or our judgment or our attitude of, this is a problem that I've got constricted thinking. It's a problem that I feel the inclination, this, that, or the other. How am I going to get free from this? You and I just need to focus on the first hishtadlis there is. The first of all hishtadlis is to know what's true, is to live in the city of refuge. I can be in a crummy state of mind, but if I trust and know, if I can acknowledge even with one little bit of my awareness that my experience is coming from the Almighty through the gift of thought in this moment, that truth is going to nourish the yashrus inside of me. It's going to allow me to step back from the window of changing weather. It's going to allow me to let go of that which is working at odds with my nature. And your nature, it's impossible. It's impossible that a person won't start to see that he slows down and settles down. It's also not likely, it's impossible that he won't still get fooled at times. But then as we gain understanding and appreciation for the beauty of this design, the profundity of it, we'll have compassion for ourselves, we'll have compassion for others, we'll see our spouses and their challenges, and we'll understand that they're experiencing the frightening feeling of a mood that they don't know, they don't understand the source of their experience, and they're truly frightened. We'll see our children, you know, getting lost and having a temper tantrum, and we'll understand that they're frightened. And our understanding of that truth will allow us to see and have compassion for ourselves, and it'll only then it'll allow us to see in others this truth. And not only will we be allowing the Almighty to help us in all the ways that He's already trying to help us, we'll be of help to the people around us. We will have the gift of new life. The babies will be born. The gift of new understanding will come through us. Literally come through us the same way that we're not in control of how the baby shows up. We just have to be present to the fact that he's causing the contractions, he's causing the openings, because he's bringing a new life. I can be in this pain. I can be in this contraction. He's causing life to come through me, and I am not in need of running away or judging or manipulating it, then I will be of help to the people around me, and that is only going to be good. So that is the time, more or less, and I just keep giving monologues, and I just keep talking, and Baruch Hashem, for the most part, I see that people are sticking around on the call. But we do have, you know, a couple minutes left, so if there is someone who would like to raise a question on the call directly, here's your chance. Okay, well, I've just, you know, everyone's unmuted. One second. I'm just unmuting a couple other people. You're unmuted, so if you want to chime in, please do so. I'm just going to take this moment to say the following. A recording of this call is going to be posted on, again, my site, JewishCenterForWellbeing.com. I'm going to make it available to Guard Your Eyes. You can reach me directly at info@JewishCenterForWellbeing.com. There are a bunch of resources on my site to learn more about this Emunah from the inside out. You can reach me at info@JewishCenterForWellbeing.com, and you can call me and leave a message at 845-393-1529. Again, 845-393-1529. And I just want to take a moment to say thank you. It was such an honor to be able to share words that are words and ideas that are close to me, that have been literally life-changing for me. Mirza Shem, next Monday at this time, we will be back. And if there's interest, I believe there's value in tuning into this ongoingly, because that's where the growth, that's where the settling down, that's where the natural turning toward our own yashrus starts to come to life. This is not an exertion, work hard, learning experience. This is seeing not how I need to generate emunah. This is seeing how the Almighty is already reaching me. I don't need to reach Him. It's about an understanding and a clarity about how He's already reaching me, how it's not the outside world that's reaching me. It's Him that's reaching me. I'm experiencing Him. I'm not experiencing anything other than Him through the gift of thought in this moment. I want to wish everyone a beautiful week. And that's it.